All right, Mr. President, are you ready?
Come on, Greg, let's get emboldened.
I like that attitude. Well, President Biden, I'm just curious, with what's going on in Baltimore right now, are you concerned what this is going to be doing to the economy?
This bridge in Baltimore, I won't let it ruin the greatest economy in the history of America.
The greatest economy? I mean, I guess that's true if you can just print money. I mean, you got the Federal Reserve at your fingertips.
If I can continue to print money for Ukraine and NATO, I can print some cash for Baltimore. Now let's eat ice cream. Nice hair. You are a great Delawarean, Greg Bolden.
You are about to listen to a phenomenal podcast, probably the greatest show since The Apprentice. If you haven't subscribed on Patreon yet, do it for me. The greatest president in the history of the earth. Sit back, grab yourself a cup of coffee or whatever it is that you're into. You're listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden. Let's get emboldened.
The founding fathers. You don't know what they did. You don't know what they sacrificed. We have lost touch with the principles in the Constitution. Nobody's read the Declaration of Independence. You are voting for socialism, and you got what you voted for.
Welcome, bold Americans, to another episode of America Emboldened. Well, I'm honored that Joe Biden and Donald Trump thought so highly of me to record that audio for my show. Ladies and gentlemen, that is AI, artificial intelligence that I stumbled upon, and I can have Joe Biden or Donald Trump say anything.
Anything? I don't just say anything. Confess, I did not have relations with that woman, and I certainly never inhaled.
Wait a minute. That's Bill Clinton. That's not Donald Trump. What about Joe Biden? Can I make him say anything?
Huh? Anything? How did I say anything? That was a good band.
Oh, yeah. Bemis. He was an awesome artist. I actually really enjoyed their albums.
Bemis.
No. My name is Greg.
Do you like ice cream?
Yeah, I guess chocolate.
And the scent of hair in the evening?
That's weird.
Charcoal Pit was my favorite. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, let's get back to the show, Joe.
What did you want me to say again? Are you from Delaware?
Yeah, I actually went to Salesianum. We met before.
Salesianum? Yes. I remember you now.
Well, that's nice that he remembers me now. Anyway, I've got to stop this. AI is so much fun. I mean, I could create an entire conversation that never happened. Do you realize how dangerous this is? I mean, I'm being upfront and letting you know that I'm using artificial intelligence, that obviously I'm not having a conversation with Joe Biden or Donald Trump. And that's good that I'm being upfront about that, because if this can be recreated in such a authentic and quick way with a free application, imagine what our enemies can do. Imagine what this means when we can match up fake video with fake audio and make it look absolutely convincing. And that technology actually exists already. If you haven't seen, there's people now that are using this camera capture tool that is able to put a different face and different body over top somebody's hand movements, facial features and movements, and it looks shockingly accurate and real. Not just that, but you can go to things like the Unreal Engine. The Unreal Engine now, when you look at what they are recreating for shows like The Mandalorian on these huge video walls, they're able to take us to whatever world they want to, and the light reacts within this virtual environment that gets made on a computer absolutely perfectly. So now couple the fact that we have the ability to make anybody say whatever we want, create their face in their image and likeness with an actor moving their hands around in a virtual environment like an Unreal Engine, and you literally will no longer be able to believe your eyes with what's happening in front of you, nor should you believe your ears. So I'm curious. I used this as a promo before today's episode. I put this out on my social media networks that Joe Biden was endorsing the show and Donald Trump was endorsing the show. And of course, everybody knows that that's fake. But I'm curious. Should people have a right digitally that their voice cannot be used in any way, shape, or form? Should this be illegal? in order to say, hey, you know, I want to make Greg Bolden say this, or you, my listener, should somebody want to blackmail you on something, get a little bit of dialogue of your voice recorded and recreate your voice, and they could blackmail your family. They could say that you're in a compromising situation, which I believe there are people getting phone calls right now from their grandchildren to grandma where it says, I'm in danger. I need money. You need to wire this to me. You need to get Bitcoin to me immediately. Go to this because the banks can't know what's happening. This is a sting that's currently happening in our country. And I feel that this is an area that needs regulation immediately. This isn't right. This isn't kosher. Sure, it's a fun tool. Sure, I had fun with this, creating it, sending a few things to family and friends. But this unchecked, oh, there's no turning back. This is a dystopia waiting to happen. And it's really a story about the arrogance of mankind. When you get down to it, we are creating at this point in time a new reality, a reality that lives outside the world of the ethereal, the things that we can touch and taste and smell. And it's now about things that disconnect us from the reality of what is life. What does it mean to be connected? What does it mean to be grounded in a human experience if we can be virtualized in any way, shape, or form? I'm curious, what lawmaker is going to be the first to say, if this continues, we're going to sue people? Who's going to stand up for your virtual rights in what we've created? You have people like Mark Zuckerberg, who I don't trust whatsoever with your virtual presence. This man in Cambridge Analytica and the experiments that he did upon people without their permission is a criminal. He should have been charged with a crime against humanity for manipulating people's emotions, the possibly contributing to suicide. And somehow people just forget that story and that he went before Congress about all of this. And we also have people now like RFK Jr. RFK Jr. is bringing in a billionaire who is married previously to the head of Microsoft, got divorced after allegedly sleeping with Elon Musk. Elon Musk is one of the most powerful information people in the world right now. He's got his own AI bot. He's building a network that is a neural network with the neural link, as well as the neural network of X itself being able to record everybody's thoughts. It's very possible pretty soon you could just upload people's postings on X and get a snapshot of them and create a virtual personality with their voice, their likeness, and image. So is there somebody that we should contact where we can start signing off that we reserve the rights? Because I would like to reserve the rights to my voice. I would like to reserve the rights to my image. There is no other Greg Bolden. There's no other person that's supposed to sound like me, talk like me, think like me. And if that's going to be put out there or misrepresented in some way, I want to be able to sue, right? I want to be able to say that that needs a cease and desist. This isn't right. And a voice. Did we forget how powerful a voice truly is? This week, I was absolutely floored in my classroom. I have a photo that I took on Wednesday afternoon. It's me in tears. And I didn't take the photo because I was crying because I was sad. They were both happy tears and tears of introspection. It happened at 9:20 in the morning on Wednesday while I was in the classroom. I have a student that has not spoken to anyone in the building. He wears a mask every single day. And earlier in the school year, I had the opportunity to see the students sitting by themselves in the cafeteria. And I knew that they don't speak, but I walked up and figured maybe this student could use company, use a friend, somebody just to be alongside them. And so I introduced myself again, just because I was only met the student maybe twice in class. It was the second week of school. And after introducing myself, I just asked a straight question. I said, I'm curious, and I won't use any names here for the protection of the student, but I'm curious, do you speak? And the student shook their head. No, that they do not speak. I said, okay, well, this is going to be challenging for the classroom, but I want to work with you. How can we communicate? And the student started using their hands. And I said, do you do sign language? To which they said, a little, with their hands. And I said, do you know official sign language, or do you do sign language like hold up numbers and kind of make motions? And they do not do official sign language. They kind of signed to me that they would be using numbers. And so for the last, I don't know, 6 months, it seems like 6 months now, but it was August. These months are flying by. September, October, November, December, January, February, March. We're in 7 months on to April. So for the last 8 months, this student has communicated by answering questions on tests silently, or when I have a question for the class, I will often call on this student. Let's call him Chris. So I will call on Chris and say, Chris, if you think it's A, hold up one finger. If you think it's B, hold up the second finger. Well, this student has responded favorably to that and started holding up one finger or two fingers, and that was great. But why did I get so upset on Wednesday? On Wednesday, I was told by one of my powers, who is a very good friend in the classroom and just a wonderful individual to begin with, that this student had spoken. Chris had raised his voice and had spoken to the power, and he was going to see if he could get it recorded because this is a milestone. No one in the entire building, all the staff, has heard this kid's voice. And so I presented my soundproof room where the kid wouldn't have to worry about the voice leaking out. I have a podcast studio there for my students and a radio station. We put the student in there, and about 10 minutes later, my power comes out and says, Mr. Bolden, can you come in here? I said, yeah, absolutely. I'll be right in. And they wanted to play the recording for me, to which the student waved it off. And I was a little bit disappointed because I was thinking, man, I really wanted to hear this student's voice. This was going to be an awesome moment. To which the student signs something to my power, and he turns to me and goes, oh, well, absolutely, Chris. Let them hear your voice. And the student, for the first time in front of me, pulls down their mask. This is the first time in 8 months I've seen this student's face. And the student says to me and points at me, I trust you. Three words that absolutely floored me. Now, his voice was unique. It was delicate. It was beautiful. And he repeated a second time, I trust you. And after a pause, and him, I think, seeing on my face that I was absolutely floored that he chose to speak to me, I was honored. But then, three words that are powerful. I trust you. He says, I wanted you to finally hear my voice. I have many different voices that I can use. Like all students, here I'm talking quietly. And I said, okay, you have many different voices, but your voice is awesome. And he cuts me off as I said, awesome. He goes, and I can talk quiet. I can talk in a medium voice. And then he shouts in the room, and I have a loud voice. Wow. Now, this might seem to my listeners as an inconsequential moment when you take for granted that we hear voices every day. But when you've been deprived of your voice and you can use it for the first time and you're placing it in front of somebody else, it's vulnerable. And then on top of that, when you can receive it after not receiving a voice for so long, and you can listen, it's amazing. In that room, I realized all that I've taken for granted about the people that have listened to me, have given me time to take my thoughts about what's in the world, research them, interview people, and oftentimes I feel like maybe I speak to be heard or to speak rather than to speak because I trust you. And I think in this AI world, where Donald Trump, Joe Biden, Morgan Freeman, SpongeBob, whatever, that I could just type in words and it would just come back, it's a violation of both trust and human relation. A few days ago, I was upset. I was upset that somebody would think that I was taking a stance with my voice to promote something that could harm other people and could be seen as me manipulating people's feelings about vaccines. If you trust my voice, if you've listened to the last almost 2 years just on this network, or maybe you've been with me since 2018 on my other podcast, interviewing students that were homeless, interviewing students that were going through mental health crisis. If you've been with me all that time, I hope that throughout that time, I have at some point recognized I trust you and you trust me. When I talk about vaccines on my show and the safe and effective, there are many vaccines in life that are safe and effective for the majority of people. In fact, there's extensive scientific studies that show this. Vaccines in and of itself are a risk-benefit analysis. It's a medical intervention, and all medical interventions, they're going to carry a certain degree of risk. But my focus that I've had on the stories that I've told have gone with mRNA, where there has not been the years of extensive scientific research in humans that there has been in all the others. So when I meet over 100 people over the last 2 years that share similar stories or shocking stories of even a rare occurrence, as some would state, because with a billion out there of doses, yeah, I guess you could say that's rare. And even I believe I said that what my guest Kayla went through, transverse myelitis, was a rare case as far as how severe it was, that not all of them are that severe. Most people can recover from it. But to say that I'm not a journalist and write that to me, that's an abuse of your voice. If there's a trust that's going on between us, then there needs to be open communication and transparency. My listeners, I'm not anti-vaccine. I'm a vaccinated individual. I got the COVID vaccine. I also had a horrible reaction from it. How people are unable to listen to those stories and say that you're endangering others? No. You're informing people, others, of their risk management, of that risk-benefit analysis. You are telling people about what the relative risk is going into it. For example, I mean, when you talk about measles or polio, the risks are far outweighed when you get vaccinated, right? They played a really big role in reducing those diseases in the world, the morbidity and the mortality, people being confined to wheelchairs. But when you talk about relative risk of something that's a new technology, I think we need to have a conversation about it. And like going into that room where somebody has been silenced for so long, someone who is diagnosed basically as a mute, that's not expected to talk to any of the teachers, any of the counselors, any of the principals, their own family, and have them pull down their mask and say, I trust you. I want you to hear my voice. Why would anybody be afraid to hear my voice and the voice of others? Why are we putting the mask back up and saying, you stay a mute? I'm sorry, but I stand by what I said last show, that the individuals in the world right now that are telling everybody else, put the muzzle back on, don't talk about it because you're endangering others. They are the individuals that are the true harm to society at this point in time. And when these individuals make this about politics, about Republicans, or about Democrats, this is about humanity. This is about everybody having the ability to have free speech and open communication. If we don't have that, if there are people that want people muzzled simply because it makes them uncomfortable, we're absolutely screwed. We are heading towards dystopia. We are heading towards where we have everything cleaned up in the AI, where we get the message typed to us that we want to hear, and not the message that we probably should be hearing. I'm concerned greatly, if you haven't noticed this over the past few shows, that we're disconnecting on what makes us connected and focusing on this virtual side and these false narratives. Things like Donald Trump's the next Hitler. He's the most dangerous person to the country. If Donald Trump gets reelected, he's got 4 years. I don't think he's putting us in any wars. If Joe Biden gets reelected, he's got 4 years. I don't think, you know, the world is all of a sudden, the United States is going to dissolve. And if RFK gets elected, I don't think this country's going anyplace. The problem is these issues of where virtual reality, augmented reality, AI, quantum computing, and an agenda for the world that's pushing us into Bolshevikism, pushing us into socialism, pushing us down the path, straight into Marxism unapologetically. That's the true harm. And it's not a political candidate that's doing that. And there's not a political candidate that can save us from that. That is the sanitization of speech. And so please, bold Americans, start speaking up. Start telling other people, I trust you, and I need you to hear my voice. There's another thing that I guess we're not allowed to talk about right now that's being muzzled. Apparently, you're not allowed to have alternative theories about what may or may not have happened with the Baltimore Bridge. Now, I'm not saying that what happened in Baltimore was not an accident, because there's a ton of evidence that shows that it was. There's the Mayday call that came out, and by the way, what brilliant work by those police officers that responded with speed to shut down the Francis Scott Key Bridge, saving probably at least 100 lives in that overnight hours, and trying to alert the work staff that was on the bridge as well. All very powerful. When you hear that audio, you can hear how calm they stayed. And it just shows the great training that our police officers have in order to take a horrible situation with 6 minutes to go before impact and be able to try to judiciously go through the process to save lives. Very, very impressive. Now, why am I asking questions about what happened with this bridge? Well, first, I looked into who was piloting the bridge. And I wanted to see more information about it. It's a boat that was made, or ship that was made, seaworthy in 2015 by Hyundai. Now, if you know anything about Hyundai, you know that their vehicles started having issues around 2015 with their engines. It's causing knock sensor issues in their vehicles. I am completely unaware of the boating world. I have no idea if the same issues also applied when you look at the boating industry with the same engines that they were making. Now, I'm assuming that the engine on a ship of this size has nothing to do with the same type of crew that works on an engine for a car. So I know that I'm not comparing apples to apples, but I'm raising a question. Does Hyundai have a quality control problem within their systems for engines that goes back almost 10 years at this point in time? I don't know what the answer to that is, but it's worth asking about. Now, the last person that seemed that had worked on this boat, when you go to BalticShipping.com, you can see the service records and find who's working on the ship, at what point they started working there, and you can see the visas of individuals and who's working on it as well. And it looks like that there is a gentleman there at the age of 52 and with the ID number 33401 that, according to BalticShipping.com, was the master of the ship from the Ukraine. And it appears that the motorman, oiler, the person who was doing repairs at one point, was from India. Just curious, are we looking into all avenues to know that anybody decide to crash this and plan? Also, I talked to somebody who's friends with captains that do the work out at sea. And I have not been able to get somebody that I could get firsthand accounts from, as far as, you know, they've dealt with situations like this. So I'm relying on almost third source, all right, to be completely open and honest with you. But my one friend that has actually been on the show before, who's a boater, said that, you know, the first thing you do in that situation is drop your anchor. And the captain should immediately. That's the thing that everybody should be working on. Now, the other interesting question that some people have raised with me is, why do all the lights go out and the rudder gets stuck? There should be different electrical systems on this ship. That it is a catastrophic failure if the entire power systems go out and the rudder gets stuck as well for 6 minutes. And then people point to the smoke saying, well, it looks like some type of engine was able to come back on that they weren't able to get. Other people have speculated that they have not seen an anchor line in the footage on the back showing that an anchor was dropped. Others have said the reason why the boat drifted the way that it is because obviously they dropped an anchor. So there's lots of information out there and not a lot of clarity within all of this. Now, the other part of the story that just came out is they recovered the equivalent of a black box. Now, on this dolly ship, the black box is something that should be recording the movements and contents, all right? And so the black box is apparently missing the last 2 minutes of data before it crashed into the bridge. Now, apparently when you lose an entire ship's power, the VDR, the Voyage Data Recorder, cannot record ship instrument data. And only audio can be recorded. So my guess would be it wasn't able to get the data for those 2 minutes, but they should have the audio from what happened. Where's the audio? I'd like to hear that. When you watch this thing at 8x speed, you can see the boat was not moving towards the bridge. It was actually moving in a different direction, and all of a sudden, it starts moving. But at the very end, before it makes impact, it shifts the other direction as if the mast and the rudder had come unlocked. And that's about 2 minutes before impact. Now, if the boat is coming back online and power has been restored, and I can see the power has been restored to the ship as it makes impact, why is there no data? So yeah, on a loss of ship's power, it doesn't record. But shouldn't it start recording again when the power comes back on? This is a major red flag. Now, why does this matter, whether or not this was a planned crash or a horrible accident? Well, I'm not trying to dishonor any of the construction workers or the victims that are still missing. I'm simply asking a question. Should we be concerned about this port being closed and is a part of a larger plan? I spoke about this on Wednesday, that this is no tiny port. This is an $80 billion port that is very, very important to the East Coast and to the United States. There's $28 billion in goods each year coming through this port, and this is the only way through. You've got to go underneath the Key Bridge in order to get to the Port of Baltimore. There's no other way around it. After that, you got to go to Norfolk. And then that truck shipping lane through 695 carried 4,900 trucks a day over it. They now have to go somewhere else. Now, there is the Baltimore tunnel system outside the inner harbor that they can start using. I don't know if there's a height restriction. It's been a while since I've gone down to Baltimore. I only live about an hour away from here. So there's part of me that's considering a road trip and covering this a little bit next week. It's my vacation for spring break, but I'm considering maybe taking a day, taking my drone down there and flying over and seeing what I can find and see who I can speak with. The other thing that's very interesting about this ship is when I looked at the photos of it on this BalticShipping.com, it's normally only about loaded halfway compared to what it was during this accident. During this accident, this thing was packed with so much cargo that I don't believe the captain could have even had a decent view of where they were going, and therefore, they had to be operating by instrument panels. And so operating by instrument panels and then losing your electricity, it would have been a horrible situation, a horrible for an accident. So if we got $28 billion worth of goods, 4,900 trucks that need to be rerouted, who's going to pay for that? Well, Pete Buttigieg and President Biden came out right away and they said, don't worry, the federal government will pay to rebuild the bridge. Why is it that we're immediately saying the federal government is going to pay to rebuild this bridge and not talk about the shipping company and what type of insurance they have to pay back the government? Now, the main thing is we need to reopen this route. I mean, I've said on my show before, there is a couple bridges that I know very well on the East Coast, in the Northeast specifically. If they take them out, meaning terrorist attacks, it would be a collapse of the entire Northeast. There would be no way around. This is almost like a test run for what that collapse could look like. And so depending on how long it takes to clear the debris, how long it takes to find the vehicles that are underneath the water, which, by the way, tide was coming in Thursday night. Here we are on Friday. Likely, that port's going to be closed for several weeks, maybe longer. I don't know. There's been no official estimate given on what we could expect for that to be reopened for individuals to resume commerce. There's an entire luxury industry out of the Port of Baltimore. You get the Carnival cruise lines. You can get your boat directly from there down to the Caribbean. That's closed. And you have about, from estimates that I saw, I think it's 43 cargo ships that cannot get out of the port. And 30 that were en route to the port just this week, they cannot get in. So they're getting rerouted. That port is the number one import of vehicles into the United States. Do you remember what happened in 2020 when we had a chip shortage and the cost of vehicles? You need a vehicle now and it's not American made? I can just imagine. If you close down the number one place and the cost, it's going to be passed along to the consumer. What's that going to cost? About $600, $750 extra per cart, right? If you need to reroute it to its destination from someplace that's 300 miles away, 200 miles away, and now you got the logistics of getting that moved, you're going to see a markup at the dealerships in the automotive industry, already on top of interest rates that are absolutely ridiculous under this administration, in an election year at that. And then there's this like really weird thing that I was thinking about too, and a couple of people sent this to me as well, and I'm seeing it posted, and no, I don't think that there's this big Obama conspiracy with what's going on, but I would like to point out, like, if you watched the Obama movie on Netflix, it's a boat that lost its communications and crashes into the shore. And that was going on all over. I mean, predictive programming much? You can't help but kind of wonder what's happening there when all of a sudden Hollywood starts looking like real life. So, yes, I have questions. No, I'm not looking to turn this into a conspiracy. But yes, there should be a larger investigation going on right now instead of this carte blanche. Well, they called a mayday. It was an accident. You could call a mayday and still intentionally do something in order to get away with it, in order to be soft warfare, not hard warfare. And anybody who's not paying attention to the fact that this could still be a terrorist attack that was planned to not look like a terrorist attack hasn't paid attention to the way the rest of the world is fighting wars lately. Now, two people so far have been rescued from the water. They're still looking for six construction workers. And when you watch that footage, it's horrifying because you can see four vehicles that clearly are construction workers that hopefully they were nowhere in their vehicles. They got on a vehicle and got off the bridge. But you see those vehicles crash into the water. And they're likely at this point in time, those vehicles 50 feet underwater, and hopefully they're empty. But knowing that there are six missing construction workers, it's not looking good for them. And then I was told that the cargo containers had people that were trapped in them that were working on them. One person's in critical condition. Another person is alive and lived through. But there may be other industries, injuries that happened on the boat. And I wasn't even thinking about injuries on the boat. I was thinking about just this bridge and the catastrophic part of that. So this is a crisis for the East Coast and the United States markets. This is going to create a barrier to access to market of food, of vehicles, and in a way that is going to rock our economy. Again, it's the first in the nation last year in automobiles, construction machinery, and farm equipment, light trucks, as well as where most of our sugar came from in our country. Now, the year before that, it was ranked sixth in coffee imports, bringing in 119,000 tons at $609 million. So yeah, we're going to have a problem here. We're going to have a major problem here. In fact, with all the jobs that are at the port, are they sustainable? And are you aware of what's going on in Baltimore? Baltimore as a city is not a place that I've been to lately. Because quite honestly, crime has been rampant, and the leadership in Baltimore has been horrible too. This is just insult to injury of a failed city on the East Coast. I don't think I have to highlight all those things for my listeners. I think you can look those up for yourself. Now, in other news stories, as you continue to think about that into the weekend, apparently Biden, Obama, Clinton, they decided to go to this huge fundraiser yesterday. And apparently Donald Trump went over to a New York police officer's funeral to show support after he was killed. Meanwhile, the president hasn't even commented. I think the message is pretty clear at this point that the left doesn't want you calling people illegal immigrants. If you can kill a police officer as an illegal immigrant and it doesn't get any attention from the president, doesn't get anybody's care, then perhaps what we have is a treasonous act by a president and something that's impeachable. It seems to me that the border isn't important to the president unless it's pandering, calling something partisan, and needing bipartisan support to try to smear another side. Well, let me tell you, the other side doesn't need to be smeared. They smear themselves enough. But this is, at this point, insulting. Insulting that a current president does not seem to care about what's going on in the cities, so much so that they're weaponizing their own government against Mayor Adams there and investigating him simply because they don't like the fact he's going after illegal immigration. That's exactly what's happening. This is the reason why I said we don't have a good choice in 2024. There is no solid choice for any of us. And when you think, you know, maybe justice could be served someday, I doubt it. I mean, the only thing that I felt good about yesterday is Sam Bankman-Fried, who I did several shows on a while back, was sentenced to 25 years in prison. They said that the sentence originally, which I think was like 115 or 120 years, would have been barbaric. Now, 110 years, I think that's what, 110 years, that's not barbaric for a man who defrauded people of over $8 billion. Some of those people that didn't have money to get defrauded from. Now, the lawyer tried to make it sound like that Sam Bankman-Fried didn't want to inflict pain on anyone in any way. Now, as a result of what Sam Bankman-Fried, I lost about $550 just in my investments over with him. I don't know what other people lost, but I'm sure that all adds up rather quickly. You know, there's also the Voyager app, lost money there as well, and they settled. I finally got my settlement check, which was pennies on the dollar compared to the money that I had. A person like this deserves to be in jail for the rest of their life so other people don't follow in their footsteps. So maybe we got a problem with our justice system being weaponized against people and being completely inefficient in their ability to sentence. I go back to Donald Trump and what happened with Judge Engoron, and people are upset over the fact that they reduced this bond into the hundreds of million instead of the 400s of million. I think we can say that if it's an appeal and you still might be getting that extra $300 million, shouldn't it be accessible that somebody should be able to appeal in this country? And at what point is it excessive for an appeal? If Donald Trump can't prove the appeal, he's still going to be on the hook for the money. But I'd just like to remind people once again, in that case, Donald Trump fraudulently represented his worth in order to get more advantageous loans from the banks, in which he admitted. And afterwards, the banks wanted their money back with interest, and he paid it all back with interest. It's very interesting that he had about $500 million that he was going to spend on his political campaign, and that's exactly what Judge Engoron came up with. It's almost like he was having dinners with certain individuals talking about how they could weaken an upcoming Trump re-election campaign. Look, I've said for a while, the wheels are going to come off the Trump bus, likely as soon as you get to the actual criminal convictions. All these civil things are what I believe is a true weaponization. This isn't about victimless crime. This is about a victim. And who is the victim in the Donald Trump fraud case in New York? Is it the banks? Is it the people of New York? I don't believe so. I believe that he's repaid everybody and that it is excessive in what the judgment was and will be. Now, when we get into the actual criminal cases, let's see what a jury says. Let's see where that goes. But these civil things that have been coming out, I think that that's a major issue. Now, a few other stories that I was paying attention to and just to kind of cover for you rather quickly here. There's a new thing coming out about Alzheimer's. The doctors are sounding the alarms that they need to screen individuals that are going to be transplant donors because they're wondering in the National Institute of Health whether or not Alzheimer's can spread through transferred organs. Now, Alzheimer's is something that has affected my family and some of my friends' families as well. It's a horrible disease that is a lung disease that's painful for all. Anything that we can do to stop the spread of this would be very important. But now, if we can spread this through organs, can any of this be caught? Is there a way that there's a mechanism where this can transfer through bodily fluids in any way, shape, or form? That these proteins can get in? Is this passing on during birth? I think this is a very interesting study and one that I'll be continuing to watch as we go. Lastly, I'd like to give you an update on my vehicle purchase. If you're following along, I purchased a Tesla back in February, took delivery March 1st, and immediately everybody was telling me, I hope you don't burn alive in your car. Well, I've had the vehicle now for almost a month. I've put over 2,000 miles on the vehicle in that month. The cost to run that vehicle with electricity at this point in time has been just under $50. Just under $50 for 2,000 miles. Now, to put that into perspective, had I ran 2,000 miles in my previous gas vehicle, I would have probably filled up my car 5.7 times at $55 a cost, which would have cost me about $314 for the month to fill up my car. So it is a savings at this point in time of over $264 in my first month of owning this vehicle. Now, the vehicle didn't cost any more than the Mazda that I purchased. My Mazda actually was more expensive than the Tesla. So not only did I save money on the purchase price, but I've also saved in the operational cost. There's no oil changes. There is nothing to worry about with the engine. Since it doesn't really use brakes, use the regenerative system through the magnets, I'm saving my braking systems as well. So I shouldn't have to replace the brakes as much. In my first month, what have I learned? I learned that there's a lot of fear around electric vehicles because it's not visible to people yet. People often say to me, I just went up to Long Island for Chris Michael's wedding. Where are you going to charge the vehicle? Aren't you nervous about getting there? To which I responded, the car can go almost 330 miles without needing to be recharged. The trip is only about 120 miles. I think I'll be okay. And sure enough, on the ride up, I hadn't charged all the way. Stopped off at the in-laws, spent the night, didn't plug the car in overnight, drove the car up, and on the way to Long Island, stopped at a rest stop, filled the car up for 5 minutes worth of electricity, ate some food, got enough after 5 minutes that we could continue the trip, although we ended up staying, finishing our food, drove on up to Long Island, got all the way up to the hotel, parked the car, stayed overnight, didn't plug it in. Next morning, went to go get some bagels, literally within a 30-second drive of the bagel shop, which, by the way, those bagels were phenomenal. I was able to plug the car into a supercharger right next to a Planet Fitness. I was at that supercharger for about 20 minutes to fill the car all the way up, so that way I'd have it to go get the kids at my in-laws and then take the trip all the way back to Delaware. And I pulled back in to my house with still 85 miles left the drive. I didn't need to charge it, didn't plug the car in. I later went to the grocery store, brought the car back from the grocery store and ran another errand. And then I finally plugged it in at my house again. Electric vehicles is a fear-based thing from people that don't understand them. The batteries are largely at this point in time completely recyclable into brand new batteries. The system itself, it likely is the best car I've ever driven. I missed my 3000 GT VR4. That car was a blast. All-wheel drive, could go through corners. Back when I was in my early 20s, that was a fun vehicle. And my dad had the 1993 40th anniversary Corvette, and I used to get behind the wheel in that, and he would let me push down the gas pedal, and we'd guzzle out our premium gasoline flying down the highway. That was a fun vehicle. But let me tell you, my Tesla Model Y Long Range makes my Mitsubishi VR4 and the Corvette shy in comparison of the over 400 horsepower all-wheel drive that comes out of the electric engine. Now, I'm not a speeder at this point in my life, but it is absolutely fun to occasionally push down that electric pedal and watch the vehicle go from 30 to 60 in a mere second and a half. It is a blast. And so when you're on the highway and no one's around, that's pretty cool to do. It's a fun vehicle. It's a computer on wheels. And I don't know that most of society is ready to make the shift towards a vehicle on wheels that is computer-based. There's cameras all around it. When I park the car and I go to work, I can get updates and alerts. And what I've discovered, lots of people rub up against your car every single day with their purses and backpacks and everything else. that largely our society doesn't care about a vehicle that's parked safely and far away from others. People will still invade your space. And it's fun watching that. I'm having a blast with my Tesla. I'm not going to tell you all have to go buy a Tesla. But if you're afraid of that technology, I'd say this. I think every home, you're going to want to have a gas vehicle for a lot of reasons. But you're also probably going to want to have an electric vehicle if you really do want to save money and experience a little bit of like the Jetsons future of driving. I think it's a blast. Now, if you would like to go for a drive in a Tesla, I do have a referral code that they gave me that can earn you lots of rewards. So first, you can go for a drive and then log into the system this way. And if you purchase a vehicle, you can get free supercharger miles, or you can get 3 months of full self-driving capability, or you can get 1 year of premium connectivity, depending on what you want to do. That is all for you guys to be able to enjoy. I'm going to put on my X page my link should you want to check this out. So I will put that in. You guys can check it and go for a test drive. They don't ask for anything other than a license, and they let you drive, and there's probably a lot around you. But it is ts.la/greg99844. That's my code. So you type in ts.la/greg99844. You can currently get a Model Y at $36,490. Plus, you get tax rebates from your local government. My state, I was able to get an extra $2,500. Some people's jobs, like Bank of America, is offering up to $4,000 back. So you can likely get this vehicle for almost under $30,000 at this point. It's a great deal. I would ask you guys, consider it and consider what you're afraid of. There's charging stations everywhere. Now, maybe you're considering a different brand electric vehicle. I would not recommend that. And the reason being is what I've learned about the electric vehicle situation is Tesla is the only company at this point in time that has the supercharger network vast enough to get you back on the road almost as quickly as a gas station. All the other companies are going to be relying on level 2 chargers, which is like charging at my house with my upgraded charger system that I have here, which is only going to get you about 50 miles within an hour, maybe 60 miles, depending on how fast they're pushing amperage out to your vehicle. And so I think that that is a major deficiency for all the other car companies at this point. I think Tesla has a major advantage, and until we can get a standardized electric system, vehicles like the Mustang by Ford are just not going to survive. Hyundai, while they have the faster charging batteries capable, it's not going to survive. They're going to need to rely on Tesla and their technology in order to make that happen. And it sounds like Elon Musk is working on that too. All right, I'm going to end here. I hope that I honored your time well here between the artificial intelligence at the beginning of the show, my student who finally spoke. Oh my God, what an amazing moment that was. And what a gift going into this Easter season. I want to wish the best to you and yours. If you've been listening here and you are a Christian, I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your Holy Week of reflecting. And I'll be back next week, Easter Monday, with brand new content for you all. You've been listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden. Be bold, America.